Call to order the Senate Committee on the Environment and Natural Resources. Today is the 1st of June. Apologize for the late start. I've been running around the Capitol figuring out whether or not we're all ready to go on some of these bills. And we are one member down this afternoon. And so that may impact things a little bit as well. So there are a number of bills that I know that we're going to carry over, and we may end up carrying over more. So I will just announce those right from the beginning. So you guys can go work on said policies if necessary, rather than sitting here listening to us and waiting for your bill to get up. So we will be carrying over House Bill 3315A. We will be carrying over House Bill 2453A. We will be carrying over House Bill 3217A. And we'll be carrying over House Bill 3382.
33, oh, got it.
And we will be carrying over House Bill 2463A. And we will be carrying over House Bill 2509A. So 2509A, 2463A, 3382, 3217A, 2453A, and 3315A will all be carried over. That does not mean that we will be working all the remaining bills just because they're on the agenda. There are a few that we are going to have some input on, but either they're not ready to go yet, or I've had a request from the vice chair, who's not able to be here today, that we not vote on it till he is here. So,
yeah. So, Mr. Chair, I assume when you say carry over, you mean to Wednesday, June 3rd, our next meeting?
Yes. Yep. Our next and final meeting, or at least I believe it will be.
Well, let's say our hope to be final meeting.
I hope it will be.
We're talking Wednesday afternoon, right?
Yes. So with that, we are going to start some work sessions here. So we're going to start out by opening up a work session on House Bill 3188. Beth, you could remind us a little bit about what this bill does.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 3188, just for the record, has a revenue statement issued and a minimal fiscal impact statement issued on the dash A3 amendment. So the A3 amendment that you heard and discussed would replace the measure, and it would allow for the creation of one or more predator damage control districts within a county where there's a minimum of 50% of eligible petitioners who cumulatively own more than 50% of the land within the district or petition for it.
Okay. So, yeah, I think that this bill is ready to go. We looked at some possible changes to it and whatnot, and found out that some of those changes just aren't possible. So it had actually been worked through a bunch of those issues prior, and so we're looking at the dash three amendments. And so love to have a motion on that.
So is the motion to the amendment?
The motion to the amendment.
Ms. Chair, I move the dash three amendment dated 5/22/2015 to House Bill 3188.
Senator Dembrough's moved the dash three amendment dated 5/22/2015 to House Bill 3188. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I think for the record, this is the A3 into 3188.
Yes, thank you for that clarification. It's the dash A3 amendment.
And I would just like to thank our community administrator. I know on Friday we were looking at some different options as to maybe taking it out of the need for this to be, let's say, managed or through the counties, and maybe have some type of private organization association to do it. But it seems like at this point that was going to be way too much to try to accomplish in such short time. So I appreciate Beth's and the legislative council. We probably had two or three people that were all at the same time putting their heads together on that one.
And thank you for your work that you did on that, Senator, and Beth as well, and legislative council, fleshing some of those issues out. So I appreciate it. Is there any other discussion on the A3 amendments? Okay, are there any objections to the A3 amendments? Seeing none, the motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3188A as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Oh, it goes to finance.
Yeah, it needs
a... Oh, sorry. Okay, I move that it be referred to the Committee on Finance and Revenue.
With a do-pass.
With a do-pass okay. recommendation.
So Senator Denbrough has moved that House Bill 3188A as amended with the -3 amendments be moved to the Senate floor with the do-pass recommendation, and that it first take a trip through the Committee on Finance and Revenue with a subsequent referral there. Is there any discussion on the motion? Okay, are there any objections to the motion? Okay, the motion carries, and that bill is on its way to Finance and Revenue. We'll close the work session on House Bill 3188. And next up on the agenda, we are going to open up a work session on House Bill 2474.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2474A to the floor with a do-pass recommendation, and that it be subsequently referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is that right?
Yes.
I thought that it was.
That is right. That is right. Sorry, Chair. I had a wrong file. Yes.
Well, that doesn't happen very often. Let's just pause for a moment and just reflect.
This is a
that the members moment. That the members knew what was happening, and the committee
true.
Administrator was just for a moment
just
a little bit flummoxed.
A little nervous for a minute, and now red chair for the record.
That's okay.
Because some people may be listening and not watching.
That's okay.
So you can appreciate the blush.
Beth knows what's happening
way before
we know what's happening, and so that's why. We're having just a little good-natured fun. So, okay, so Senator Denbrough has moved House Bill 2474A to the Senate floor with the do-pass recommendation, and that it be referred first to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? This is, folks, do you want to have some discussion about the bill?
I was trying to remember the testimony on this, and what I'm assuming from looking at the catch line that there were some concerns. Maybe there are some operations presenting themselves to be offering these type of services that are not at this point registered with the Oregon State Veterinary Medical Examining Board.
Mr. Yeah, Chair, correct. The bill itself would require that certain veterinary facilities to register with the board and designate a licensed veterinarian to ensure facilities in compliance with certain rules adopted by the board.
So. Okay.
And this, if I recall correctly, and I'm trying to pull up my notes here, seemed to be a fairly consensus-oriented bill between both the veterinarians and the veterinary medical examining board. So.
Okay.
Is there any other discussion on this bill? Okay, seeing none. Are there any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries. And House Bill 2474 is on its way to Ways and Means, where we wish it luck. We will now close the hearing on House Bill 2474, the work session on 2474, and we'll open up a work session on House Bill 2475.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 2475 would authorize the Veterinary Medical Examining Board to impose a fine of not more than $100 on any permit or license holder regulated by the board or an administrative or clerical violation that does not create a risk of harm to the public. There's a no revenue and no fiscal impact on that bill.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2475 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Denbrough has moved House Bill 2475 to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay. Are there any objections to the motion? Seeing none, The motion carries. And 2475 is on its way to the Senate floor. And does anybody want to carry that bill in particular? Okay.
Do we have anyone
was
named
it
on that?
Oh.
No, he didn't. He wasn't the one that brought this. Okay. This bill,
was,
I don't think so.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I believe it was an agency bill
yeah.
that was
agency.
Brought forward.
I'll carry the bill. So we will now close the work session on House Bill 2475. And we are going to open up a work session on not my favorite bill of the session, but a damn fine amendment, if I do say so, on House Bill 2910. So we'll open up a work session on House Bill 2910.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2910 is one of a series of measures that was created by and prepared by Legislative Council under the requirements set forth in House Bill 4133 from 2014 that repeals obsolete laws relating to agriculture experiment stations. There's a dash one amendment that removes the repeal of the John Jacob Astor Agriculture Experiment Station. There's a no revenue impact and no fiscal impact on the dash one amendment.
Beth, could you say again what the amendment did?
The amendment removes the repeal of the John Jacob Astor Agriculture Experiment Station. So the station would remain in statute.
For reasons that I'm sure we'll all be interested in learning.
Yes.
Oh, time's sake.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendment. It's dated May 6, 2015.
Senator Denbrough has moved the dash one amendment dated June 6, 2015.
May 6,
2015 to House Bill 2910 discussion. So this is a little change to this bill that's an otherwise relatively innocuous bill, and I just personally like the reference to the John Jacob Astor Experiment Station that's currently in law.
And where's it located?
And I actually don't know, but
I'm trying to figure
well,
out.
Well, no, the Ag Experiment Station no longer exists.
But where did it exist at one point?
I actually don't know. But it's been a handy tool that has been used by legislators in the past to get relating clauses. So we want to leave that tool and that's full disclosure on the record. So
it happens.
This one slipped by one of the House members that cares about this bill a lot. So,
Mr. Chair, that explanation satisfies me fully.
Thank you. So with that, is there any further discussion on the motion on the dash ones? Seeing none, are there any objections to the motion of the dash ones? All right. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2910 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Denbrough has moved House Bill 2910 as amended to the floor, Senate floor, with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries, and I will carry this bill, and we will now close the work session on House Bill 2910, and we'll open up a work session on House Bill 3068A.
Committee members, House Bill 3068A has a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact statement issued on the bill, and the measure itself would direct DEQ to form a work group to study and develop recommendations for reducing wood stove smoke.
All right.
Ms. Chair, yeah. I move House Bill 3068 to the floor with, 3068A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Denbrough has moved House Bill 3068A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Questions? Okay. Are there any objections to the motion? Note for the record, the objection of Senator Thompson. And with that, we will, the motion carries, and we will close the work session on House Bill 3068A. And now,
Carrier.
Let's see who.
Mr. Chair, I was actually.
I know we had a
This was Representative Johnson's bill, so I assumed the good senator that represents Representative Johnson's was going to carry the bill. It'll be quite interesting with a no vote and how he'll be carrying the bill.
I could carry it. No. I've done that before.
If you want to. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I'll be glad to carry it.
Okay. Senator Dembro will carry the bill.
I'll be glad to carry it, too, because Oak Ridge has woods.
Go ahead. You do have, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Senator
Brzozinski will carry that bill. I think I already closed the work session on it, didn't I?
That's okay.
Yeah. So now we are going to pause, catch our breath, make sure that we are proceeding properly here.
I've got everything checked off on the first one up through 3382.
Yep. Yeah. First page is done.
Yes, we are going to do that one.
You want to do the other work sessions?
That one's going to be a hearing.
Mm-hmm.
That one's going to be a
hearing. Do those bottom ones if you want to do that and get those done.
Yeah, I want to get all the work sessions done first that we've already had. This one. And that one. Okay, and I announced carryover of it. Did I? No, I didn't. We're going to have some folks come. Okay. So we're going to move into a work session now, open up a work session on House Bill 2034.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 2034 would remove the State Parks and Recreation Department authority to exercise the power of eminent domain over certain lands within the boundaries of the Willamette River Greenway near Bowers Rock State Park. There is a no revenue impact and a no fiscal impact statement issued on this bill.
Okay, so.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2034 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Dembro has moved House Bill 2034 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on this one?
Well, I really don't remember this one that well.
Now, this is the one that where he had the intimate domain, the family that came and has the farm, which is right outside of Albany. On the river, and we talked about,
right,
and they had
right.
the photographs yes. showing how still had access and all that.
Mr. Chair and committee members.
The river park.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Just also for the record, Senator Brzozinski hadn't asked a question about access to the road, and there's someone from the agency here, but they did submit information that we have available on OLIS that they do have access to
yep.
the park.
Remember that.
Okay. Are there any other questions or concerns about this bill, comments? Discussion. Okay. Are there any objections to the motion? Okay, the motion carries. And on this one, Senator Thompson, do you want to carry this one? Okay.
Sure.
Senator Thompson will carry this one. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2034. And then let's see, I think we have the amendments back on this one, right?
Yes, correct. My Representative Clemens is not here.
Okay, he's not here, so we'll come back to that one. Okay, we will open up a work session on, I'm going to go to this one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Perfect.
We're going to open up a work session on House Bill 2277A.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 2227A would expand the definition of the Drainage District Act and authorize the drainage districts to carry out activities for the purposes of the act, including enacting ordinances and charging fees. There is an amendment that has the -A4 amendment that has just recently been posted on OLIS this morning, so we do not have paperwork on it, but I believe there are people here that would be very capable and able to explain that amendment to you.
Mr. Landauer, you want to come forward with proponents and previous opponents or just everybody that feels relevant to explain what we got going here in the A4s?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Chair Edwards, members of the committee. Mark Landauer here on behalf of Multnomah County Drainage District. You heard this measure in the previous month, at which time Water Watch expressed a few concerns about the broad capture of the measure. We have worked with Water Watch to the point where the measure has been confined, shall we say. I've got Reed Wagner, the general manager of Multnomah County Drainage District, as well as Jeff Condit, a partner at Miller Nash, who's legal counsel for Multnomah County Drainage District, and Mr. Condit and Mr. Wagner can answer further questions, but Mr. Condit will give you a brief explanation of the amendment so that you understand what we're trying to accomplish.
Thank you, Mark, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The basic substantive change to this bill over the one you heard last was it limits the reach of the bill to only those drainage districts that currently have federal flood control projects within their jurisdiction. And that includes Multnomah County Drainage District and about 10 other drainage districts. And that satisfies Water Watch's concern that the expanded authorities might be utilized by rogue drainage districts to create mischief. So only those districts that currently do operate flood control and obviously need the power to have to continue to operate flood control measures would have the expanded authority under the statute. And that required a more significant redraft because we had amended the existing bill, and so they had to add some provisions to replicate some of the provisions of the current bill and apply those to drainage districts authorized to do flood control. So that's really the sole substantive amendment to this version, and it looks longer than it is for that reason.
And, Mr. Chairman, I just note that OLIS also has a copy of Ms. Priestley's testimony signifying their neutrality to the A4 amendment. At this time, we know of no other concerns at this point.
Oh, I just wanted to express our appreciation to Water Watch for working with us to resolve the issue that we had.
Great.
Thank you.
Anything to add, sir?
No. Mr. Chair, I'm here just to answer questions.
Okay. All right. Any questions for the panelists? Okay.
Very sensible solution to a difficult problem.
Very sensible solution. We unfortunately don't have the paperwork, so I just want everybody to be clear that we do intend on moving the bill, and I'm glad and thank you for the work that you guys did to get everybody to yes on this. We would move it today, but we don't have the paperwork yet, so
Wednesday.
Yep, it's going to be Wednesday, so we're going to carry that carry over 2277.
A
to Wednesday's meeting. So with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2277A and carry it over again for the record. Carry it over to Wednesday, and we. Okay. All right. Next, we're going to open up a work session on House Bill 2723A. And Beth, if you could summarize it really quickly. Ivan Molesky, if you could come forward and tell us a little bit about what the amendment does.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this bill has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Finance and Revenue, and it has a revenue statement issued on the dash A4 amendment, as well as a no fiscal impact issued. The bill itself is related to urban agriculture incentive zones. The dash A4 amendment replaces that measure and goes into greater detail.
Well, thank you, Chair Edwards, members of the committee. I'm happy to talk about this bill. I think this may be the fifth or sixth time I've testified in one form or another in one side of the building or another. So this is the dash A4 amendment we're talking about. As you recall, there were a number of questions raised at the last hearing on this bill. A number of them were technical issues that the Department of Revenue had raised. There were also a number of issues that we had agreed to carry forward from the discussion on the House side that had not yet appeared in a physical amendment yet. So, in the big picture, that's what the A4 is attempting to do. And so the most important things that I'll flag for your attention here are that, I'm going to kind of go down through it, but first of all, just to be clear, the tax benefit that is attained by through this urban agriculture would not be applicable to growing, harvesting, or possessing a marijuana. There were a couple of amendments that we worked with the League of Cities on regarding just clarifying that only cities can designate urban agriculture incentive zones within their boundaries, not the county. Furthermore, that if land inside a county urban agriculture zone is annexed by a city, only the city can subsequently renew that incentive once it expires. Both the zone, the city would have to proactively set up their own zone, but also the any future agreements would have to come between the city and the landowner as opposed to the county. We also discussed the size limit. This is something that we had worked on the House to establish. First of all, we set an upper level of farms no larger than 5 acres could qualify. And then separately, one of Revenue's concerns is that we have a minimum size, so we set that at 5,000 square feet. So that's about a 50 by 100 foot plot. So it's ranging from 5,000 square feet to 5 acres. Separately, we just clarified that unimproved land for the purposes of this measure could include land that has some ag-related infrastructure such as greenhouses or hoop houses. We wanted to make sure that if you had greenhouses or hoop houses or other ag-related infrastructure, it wasn't disqualified from by virtue of that it had some minor development. And also separately, that transferring of the title does not affect the assessment. That was another piece that's in the dash A4s. Importantly, the sunset clause, which was discussed at the last meeting, is twofold in the dash in the amendment. First of all, the first sunset relates to the designation of the zones themselves by a city or county. We set that at January 1st, 2019. So effectively, we're saying to cities and counties, you've got 3 years within which, if you want to take advantage of this tool, to establish the rules. Separate from that, is the assessment itself, which again can only be utilized if a city or a county has established one of these zones. The assessment then would be available no later than July 1st, 2023. So that's basically 5 years after the end of the three-year period that a city may have or a county may have waited to adopt one of these zones. And then at that point, I think we'll have a pretty clear understanding whether this program is of use and whether the legislature wants to continue it past 2023 or not. And then lastly, the land use question has come up a lot, and the way that the dash A4 amendment deals with that is simply to say that these urban agriculture zones are solely for the purposes of the special assessment, and that is it. They are solely for the purpose of the special assessment. They are not intended to impact land use, other land use questions. It's really just the special assessment itself, which is the case, as we understand it, for the existing special assessment for farms and non-EFU land. So we wanted to make it similar in that way. So that's the dash amendments. I know there's probably some questions from, it may not be the perfect drafting of this, but I think we've captured pretty much all of the major issues that have been discussed at one time or another. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions about the amendments?
So, Mr. Chair, I was just looking at the amendment, and it has a lot of the stuff in there. On the part about prohibiting marijuana from being grown there, I remember we had that discussion. Was that in the original bill?
It was not. The Department of Revenue had raised this question, and I don't know if it was a typo or not, but they suggested that we include it. I think Representative Clem in particular wanted to exclude it, so it's written as an exclusion here.
Yeah, I was just looking to see where it's at, because it seems to me, I'm thinking of local control, if it's in a non-residential area where you would think this would be, why we would prohibit the cities from having that option if they wanted to do that. But I didn't see where it was defined out.
For that exemption.
Are we talking? I was looking at the A4s.
It's this first section right here.
Okay. Oh, there it is. Sorry. Didn't see it. Thank you. The only thing I would say is I imagine they could do a, if necessary, conflict amendments, or is this agricultural production being limited, this definition, exclusively for this one statute? Because in the 91 committee, we are not making that distinction. We're saying it is agriculture. And I have the guru of all gurus in the room, Representative Helm, on land use, who's been working on this, if the chair would want any more. But That's my only hiccup or hesitation on this at this point.
Could Ivan, could you walk through, because I'm going to admit I wasn't listening as carefully as I probably should have been, so I'm thinking about what the other bills we're working on are as well. So Representative Clem, we have some questions about the marijuana piece of the of the bill. Uh-huh. So just walk us through that, what the amendment does. Would it be in conflict with other policies that are being contemplated in the legislature this session?
So I'll take a stab, Chair Edwards, Senator Prezansky. That the growing, harvesting, and processing of marijuana is addressed in this bill. A couple other folks have raised that issue. That may not be the best way to deal with it in terms of agricultural production. It's my understanding this is just for the purposes of this assessment. If it goes farther than that, certainly not the intent. So that may be an example of something we want to reword a little bit differently. I would note that this bill, though it has no distinct revenue impact that I've seen, it does have a subsequent referral to finance and revenue. So there's still time to work out those fine details.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, just for Representative Clem, this will come in. And under the amendment, the dash 4, section 1, starting on lines 5 through 8, it does say agricultural production does not mean growing, harvesting, or processing marijuana, where the ballot measure 91 implementation committee, we are actually calling out and stating that the production of marijuana is, in fact, agricultural. So that just kind of looks like we may have a conflict. And the other part I was trying to come to grips with is when I remember your testimony, these areas are going to be within a city limits area or within a UBG, but they're not in a residential area. And that was the prohibition that we have put in on 91, is that there's greater restrictions in residential as to what can or can't be done under 91 or with the medical. And so I just want to make certain we're not, let's say, setting up some conflict in this portion as to what the joint committee is doing on 91.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Brian Clem, State Representative from District 21. And to Senator Prezansky's question, I know that the intent here by putting in the words as used in this section, we're trying to not have implications on other parts of state statute. It doesn't mean that people wouldn't later argue, well, over here in the assessment you did that, because that always seems to happen. But the tool here is for cities or counties in their urbanized areas, and I don't know how it relates to growing of marijuana in the measure 91,
okay,
because I'm not sure what they've said about that part.
Well, I think calling it out by just saying and pulling out where it says as used in this section, that may be enough for defining it. I just want to make certain we set the record that we're not going to have cross purposes, and so I think that's fine, Mr. Chair.
So as used in this section, being the
being a qualifier,
operative qualifier.
Okay. This clarification, Legislative Council.
So it should. So we've received word from Legislative Council.
That's right.
Yes, so Mr.
Evidently, who must be watching?
They always watch.
Yes,
that's our big brothers.
They just clarified that as used in this section would apply to both parties of Section 1, Sub 1A, and then I wrote back, so would it be exclusive to this act and not be impacted by other bills passed, or not impact other bills passed, and they said correct.
Okay.
So thank you, Legislative Council, for watching.
Thank you, LC.
Okay. Other questions about the amendments that have been proposed? You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
You're fine? Okay. Anybody else okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
All right. Let's roll.
So, Mr. Chair, I move the dash A4 amendment dated May 28th, 2015.
Senator Dembrough has moved the dash A4 amendment to House Bill 2723A. That amendment is dated 5/28/2015. Is there any discussion? Okay, are there any objections to the motion? Okay, the motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2723A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that it be referred to the Committee on Finance and Revenue by prior reference.
Senator Denbrough has moved House Bill 2723A as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation, and that it be referred to the Committee on Finance, Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue by prior reference. Is there any discussion on the motion? Okay. Are there any objections to the motion? Okay. The motion carries, and this fine piece of legislation now heads to Committee on Finance and Revenue.
Thank you.
Good luck. We will close the work session. Everybody always detects cynicism in my voice when I say that. I don't mean it that way.
Did you carry over the other ones I might need to be here for? That's
Well, hold on just a second. Yeah. We're going to close the work session, House Bill 2723A. And, Representative, we carried over 2509. We carried over 2509. We carried over beaver dams.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, that's, I think those are probably the ones that you were.
That was my list as well.
Your list, yeah. Okay. Yeah, those are carried over.
Thank you.
And now we're going to pivot back to 2830. So we're going to open up a public hearing. We haven't had a public hearing on this yet. Public hearing on House Bill 2830A. And Representative Helm, Beth will tell us a little bit about what the measure does, and then you're on.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 2830A would lengthen the time period for local governments to take final action on applications after remand based on a final order of LUBA to 120 days. There's no revenue and a minimal fiscal impact statement on the issued on the act.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. This is a bill that's intended, I think, to streamline a little bit the process of processing land use decisions that are remanded from the Land Use Board of Appeals. The problem that it's intended to address is that in certain circumstances, remands are allowed to return to the local government, and then they sit there for extended periods of time, sometimes years, and only to be revived in some instances many months or years later, or not. And sometimes they languish there forever. There's a few problems with this. One is that LUBA has to keep track of them, which is administratively burdensome. Two, the local government has to keep track of them. Oh, I'm sorry. I got way ahead of myself. Ken Helm, representative for House District 34.
Sorry to break your
no problem.
Train of thought there.
Secondly, the planning offices of the cities or counties have to keep track of these applications. And probably most important, all the folks that worked on these applications as they came through, both the proponents and the opponents, have to keep track of it. And in order to address this problem, what I thought best would be to give the local governments a little bit of extra time over what they currently have, which is 90 days, and extend that to 120 days, and then make them make a decision pretty early on. So once an application is remanded, the language here gives them a little bit of time to make a decision, about 6 months. If they don't notify the local government within that time, the application automatically terminates. If they decide they need a little bit more time and they want to negotiate with all the interested parties, they can enter into mediation through an existing statute that allows the Department of Land Conservation Development to help with it, and then they can have up to a year to resolve the issue. And in my experience, that should be enough. That is what the bill does, and it is my hope that that this does reduce the number of LUBA cases by making those parties decide quickly on whether to act on the remand or not. Happy to answer any questions.
Okay. So I think I have a couple of questions, but so you're characterizing this as streamlining. Is it so there have been no opponents that have come to me and asked this question? I'm just wondering. So if you're limiting the amount of time, and so by limiting the amount of time, and then you say, okay, if that amount of time, if that times out, then you need to start over, which doesn't sound like a very fun prospect. I'm just trying to get an understanding of how this changes the dynamics of the whole process moving forward, because I'm generally in favor of things that streamline, but if it makes it more difficult, then I'm generally not in favor of that. So
what would you say to that? It's a good question. When LUBA remands a decision to the local government, it's usually for a handful of reasons. One, the underlying findings aren't good enough. They don't demonstrate that the criteria have been met in some way. That situation is fairly easy to solve if everyone is in agreement and has energy to do it. You go back in, rewrite the findings to address the problem, and move on. Sometimes substantial evidence to support the decision made by the local government is absent. And in that case, there may be an opportunity to relook at existing evidence or try to solve that problem. It's more difficult, for sure. And sometimes the LUBA's remand is that the local government violated the applicable law. And if that is the basis for the remand, it'll be very, very difficult for the local government to solve the problem. And so the applicant's best option is probably restarting anyway and amending the type and terms of the application. And again, it's my thought that making the parties make a quick decision rather than waiting for the composition of a county commission or a city council to change and retrying the old application is a benefit to the local government, for sure.
Okay.
I can let me add this.
Yeah.
The language I accommodated and offered additional amended language from the home builders, and that's reflected here. So they had some concerns about how quickly the early decision-making process would happen, and so the language indicating that they have 180 days to make that decision is an accommodation of the home builders. I think I got the other parties that are typically interested in land use to neutral on this bill before it moved out of the committee.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions of the representative? Good. Okay. Before we take other testimony on this bill, we're going to go to 2831, so you can offer your testimony on that as well. So we'll open up a work session on House Bill 2831. Beth, can you tell us briefly what it does, and then we'll go to Representative Helm again.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 2831, there's a no revenue and a minimal revenue impact, would prohibit property line adjustments on land zoned for exclusive farm use, forest use, or mixed farm and forest use resulting from a subdivision or partition authorized by a waiver under specified circumstances.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Again, Ken Helm, representative for House District 34. This is a really fairly simple bill that aligns the subdivision statute, ORS 92, with the provisions of Measure 49. And as you probably remember, Measure 49 granted to property owners the ability to, in addition to the lot that they already had on certain lands, on EFU lands, obtain two additional lots through a process. And when they obtain those lots were set at a certain size, 5 acres on non-high-value farmland and 2 acres on high-value farmland, for the purpose of preserving farmland. and also accommodating folks' desire to have a couple more residential lots for whatever the purpose they wanted. What we've since learned is that it's a little bit confusing for some of the planning departments because property line adjustments are typically administrative actions. They don't go through a big review process, and property line adjustments are allowed for all sorts of reasons, and it's sometimes the case that the city or county, or the counties in this case, wouldn't catch the limitation that Measure 49 imposed. So we wanted to align the two statutes so that instances in which a property owner may wish to expand those two lots that they obtained through Measure 49 waivers beyond what Measure 49 allows would not occur through a property line adjustment. And in some additional research that we did through the course of the hearing, we determined that the existing change would probably protect and apply to and protect about 1,700 existing EFU lots in the state that are of significant size, you know, over 80 or 100 acres, for example. When you get down to smaller sizes of farmland that have already been reduced below the minimum lot size for agricultural land, the existing statute does a pretty good job, but we need these changes to protect those large lots. Huh? I think you'll receive more testimony from Steve McCoy from 1,000 Friends on this bill today. Great. Again, like the last bill, I think through discussion, we were able to get all the interested parties to neutral. I hope that remains the case. That was the case as it moved out of the committee on the House side.
Great. Any questions for Representative Helm?
Thank you. Shall I stay up here in case you have further questions? Or just?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Next, we'll call up Steve McCoy to speak to both House Bill 2830A and 2831, if you would.
Chair Edwards, members of the committee, I am Steve McCoy, representing 1,000 Friends of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on both of these bills. On HB 2830A, as Representative Helm described extremely well, currently when a case is remanded from LUBA, it can sit in a zombie state at the local government, where it has been approved by the local government but has been remanded by LUBA. And this does create a burden for LUBA, creates a burden for the local government, and of course it also creates a burden for the parties to the appeal. One of the main tenets of Oregon's land use law is that time is of the essence. You see that in statutes of limitations, for example. That's 21 days, that you have 21 days to appeal a land use decision. You also have, the local government has anywhere from 120 to 180 days to make land use decisions the first time around as well, from when they received the application. So elsewhere in land use law, it is recognized that doing things quickly is extremely important. And we feel like making it the same here would benefit all parties. And HB 2831, so when Measure 49 was passed by the voters back in 2007 and included a simple mechanism to encourage continued resource use on resource lands even after a Measure 49 claim was executed. So it requires newly partitioned lots to be a maximum of 2 acres if they're on high-value farmland, or a maximum of 5 acres if they're on non-high-value farmland. This is so that the remnant parcel, the other piece, will remain large enough for commercial agriculture. And as Representative Helm said, there has been some confusion at some local governments about whether a property line adjustment can take place afterwards so that large commercially viable piece of agricultural land can be made smaller by the other two parcels being larger. And I think DLCD has submitted testimony that it is in their opinion, and they have also given this guidance to the counties, that that cannot be done under current law. However, local governments have done that regardless, and we think clarifying that in law would be useful for Oregonians. Thank you.
All right. Questions on for Steve on either 2830 or 2831? All right.
Thanks.
Thank you. Is there anybody else that would like to testify on either House Bill 2830A or 2831? Okay. If we don't have that. So, Representative Helm, on 2830, I just for my own comfort level, maybe we could have a meeting tomorrow on that. I'd just feel more comfortable if we carried that over. Because I want to make sure that I understand exactly what the ramifications of this are. And so I know that there's appears to be a lot of neutrality, but I also know that sometimes people are quiet when they don't want to be quiet, but they've agreed to be quiet. So I just want to make sure that I understand the implications of 2830. And so we're going to carry that one over. But we are going to work, I would like to work 2831 as soon as we get our additional missing Senate member here. So with that, so I'll close the work session. The public hearing. Thank you. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2830A. And that bill will be carried over to Wednesday for a work session, presumably, as long as I make sure just I understand everything correctly, on Wednesday. And we're in a public hearing currently on House Bill 2831, so we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2831. We're going to open up a work session on House Bill 2831.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2831 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Dembro has moved House Bill 2831 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Senator Thompson.
I just need to declare a potential conflict of interest. My family has a couple 49, measure 49 claims.
Okay. Senator Thompson's potential conflict of interest is noted for the record. Is there any other discussion on the motion? Are there any objections to the motion? Seeing none, the motion carries. And is there anybody that would particularly like to carry this bill?
I'll do this one.
Okay. Senator Brzozinski will carry House Bill 2831, and we will close the work session on House Bill 2831.
Chair, sorry I had to step out of the room, but did you say House Bill 2830A is carried over to Wednesday?
Yes.
Thank you.
And now I think what I'd like to do is move to House. We have Representative Peluso here. So I want to, we have a little bit of, we have a few folks to testify on that particular bill. And so what we're going to do is we're going to move into our public hearing. We're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3478. And Beth, if you could tell us briefly what the bill does. And the first panel I'm going to call forward is Mark Yeager, Tracy Rutten, and Mark Landauer.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 3478 has a no, you have a series of amendments available to you on OLIS. The bill itself phases in the prohibition on the manufacture and sale of personal care products and over-the-counter drugs that contain synthetic plastic microbeads, unless you want me to explain all of the amendments.
That's fine.
Okay.
Sure. Any of you could start with what you think about this bill.
Chair Edwards, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mark Yeager. I'm the Utility Services Manager for the City of Albany. And I'm currently testifying on behalf of the Oregon Association of Clean Water Agencies. That's a private nonprofit professional organization of Oregon's wastewater treatment and stormwater management agencies. Our members provide services to 2.4 million Oregonians and serve 62% of Oregon's homes and businesses. AQUA, the Association of Clean Water Agencies, supports a strong, effective microbeads phase-out bill. Our reading of House Bill 3478A, the engrossed version, while well-intentioned, contains language that seems to provide some loopholes for certain types of plastic microbeads to be used in products. The Dash 11 amendments, which apparently are out and possibly before you, the Dash 11 amendments are a marked improvement in the language, and I believe that we will support that bill. I do want to register one reservation on at least my part, and I'm not sure that Tracy or Mark agree with me on this, but I am concerned about the definition of plastic microbeads in that remains within the bill, which links the definition of plastic microbead to the manufacturer's intention for use of the plastic microbeads. We've been assured by Ledge Council that it's okay, it's not a problem, but I just want to send that out there. And finally, I would just like to say that wastewater treatment plants are not normally designed to remove very small particles that float. Products that get introduced into the wastewater stream all the time, often without regard to ultimate fate in the environment. So pollution prevention is the most effective way to stop pollution and environmental damage, and I'd be happy to ask any questions. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today.
Great. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tracy Rutten with the League of Oregon Cities, and here today on behalf of municipal wastewater providers. The League submitted joint testimony with the Special Districts Association and the Association of Clean Water Agencies in support of House Bill 3478 while it was being considered on the House side. In Oregon, we do spend millions of dollars each year to treat wastewater in local communities. We are frequent advocates, as Mark just indicated, of pollution prevention. It is a far more cost-effective mechanism for protecting Oregon's water quality. We support House Bill 3478 and the Dash A11 amendments. These amendments would strengthen the definitions in the legislation and would also amend language that was in the original measure, which prevents local governments from adopting regulations at the local level that differ from the legislation. The Dash A11 amendments would remove that language once the phased-in ban has been fully implemented. Thus, essentially creating a moratorium on local governments from adopting standards that are different than that which is indicated in the legislation or adopting a timeline that is more aggressive than the legislation proposes. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
We'll have a question for you after the whole panel speaks.
Good afternoon, Chair Edwards, members of the committee. Mark Landauer on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. Several types of different districts, including storm and wastewater treatment districts. I'll just say me too at this point and allow the chair to ask his thoughtful question.
Well, I thought you were going to say it all again, and then I wouldn't have to ask the question. But okay, so Tracy, say what you said again. About which amendments do what and which you support, why?
The Dash A11 amendments are what we support.
Okay.
They tighten the definitions, and then they also deal with an issue around language in there that would ban a local government from adopting any regulations that differ from what is being proposed in the legislation and the Dash A11 amendments. Essentially, once the phase-in has gone through each of its three phases, then that language would be removed from the book, so there's not a preemption that's just still hanging out there in statute.
Right, okay. That's what I understood prior to the hearing, but I just wanted to make sure that I heard it correctly and I understood it correctly. Okay. Questions for any of the panel members? Yeah. Senator Prasansky.
Just following up on the definition, synthetic plastic microbead, it looks like the same definitions in both the 11s and the 12s. I understand the cities are supporting the 11s. What are the 12s?
Chair Edwards and Senator Prasansky.
Bad thing to say.
I was going to say, if Beth would like to answer that, that might be.
I think, Mr. Chair and committee members, we had a little confusion about what was being drafted where, And so the A-12, when I heard about the league's concern over the prohibition language after the phase-out, I requested an amendment that would exclusively do that one piece of it. The Dash 11 incorporates that with the Dash 10. Thank you. I don't want to do it wrong. Dash 10. So it just merges those two amendments together. So the Dash 11 does the definitions as well as removing the prohibition.
All right. So is that what everyone at the dais is wanting, the 11s? But there's concern as to having a definition of what the intent of the manufacturer is?
That is my Chair Edwards, Representative, or Senator Przanski. That's my reservation. I understand that the Legislative Council has said that's not something we should be concerned about, but it is a reservation that I have because it's within the definition of a plastic microbead that has to be a certain size, mm-hmm. and then there's two subsections that talk about the manufacturer's intent, and I don't really understand the purpose for that, but I'm willing to take the Legislative Council's recommendation if the committee's agreeable to moving the bill forward as it's amended.
So, Mr. Chair, just following up as to the record, are we assuming that the manufacturer is going to be putting on the instructions such as the manufacturer intends the consumer to rinse off the body after use? I mean, I'm trying to figure out what or how that message gets across to, I mean, kind of wacky to have that in there. I mean, but I'm trying to figure out how we actually know what their intent is. Okay, thank you very much.
I don't know that they would necessarily have that.
Chair Edwards, members of the committee, that's my reservation. I don't understand why that language is necessary, but I also am willing, I guess, at this point to take Legislative Council's guidance on that.
Okay. No, I'm just assuming they're going to have instructions, like if it's a conditioner or wash or something that you supposed to rinse it out or something. Still sounds wacky, but
if I could follow up, is there concern that these beads could accidentally get into a product, and then if they're detected, somebody would be in violation?
Chair Edwards, Senator Dembro, my understanding of if you look at the legislation closely, it microbeads that are covered by this proposed phase out must be intentionally put into the product by the manufacturer. And I'm okay with that language that the manufacturer intentionally puts it in, but the intention for how it's going to be used and whether you're supposed to rinse it out, that's in the definition of plastic microbead, and it didn't make any sense to me.
This will become a moot point once it's phased out.
Yes, that would be great. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions for the panelists? Okay. Thank you each for being here. Next, we are going to go with Charlie Plyben from Surfriders and Tori Linbo, City of Gresham. I'm not sure if I got that name right, but.
Chair Edwards, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Charlie Plyben. I am the Oregon Policy Manager for Surf Rider Foundation. I appreciate this opportunity to speak to you on behalf of our greater membership here in Oregon, our chapters throughout the state who have worked on plastic issues for many, many years. We are in support of the Dash A-11 amendments. We had raised some concerns early on during the House over the inclusion of biodegradable plastics or the exemption of biodegradable plastics. That raised a lot of red flags for us. It was our understanding that this bill was the intention of this bill was to remove plastics from these types of products, not redefine new standards for what types of plastics could be included. So there's a number of reasons why biodegradable plastics present problems to us, both in the waste management area and in the environment, and we don't think this bill is a place to create those standards or define those standards. Rather, simply the intent of the bill was to remove those things from these products. Another reason why the inclusion of biodegradable standards is problematic is because none actually currently exist. ATSM standards, there is one for biodegradable plastics in the marine environment. It's been withdrawn and is currently under review, so it's not applicable. The state of Oregon does not have any standards for biodegradable plastic. It's been problematic in a number of different waste management areas beyond this bill. Doing so and creating those standards would, you know, essentially create a rulemaking process and a fiscal impact on DEQ, all things, again, that we did not see as the intent of this bill. So we do support the Dash 11 amendments, and we'd be happy to entertain any questions about that.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Chair Edwards and members of the committee, thanks for having me. For the record, my name is Tori Linbo, and I am a environmental program manager for the City of Gresham's Water Resources Program. And I, without trying to replicate anything else that's been said here, I, too, am in support of the Dash 11 amendments to this, mostly over concerns of the defining of synthetic plastics versus just plastics, as well as local control. And I say that in part because the City of Gresham has spent a lot of resources on our wastewater treatment facility. And as one wastewater treatment plant in the state, I want to speak on behalf of not only the ratepayers I represent, but on behalf of ratepayers around the state that are basically paying for wastewater treatment to remove waste before it's released out into the environment. We're basically putting water that we repurposed, put it out into the environment, and we have not designed plants to remove plastics and the things that these plastic microbeads carry with them. And I haven't heard anybody talk about this yet, but, I mean, there are a lot of environmental contaminants that these became perfect receptor sites for. We're talking about PCBs, legacy pesticides like DDT, heavy metals. So they basically become a mechanism for these things to be brought into the environment, not pulled out in wastewater treatment plants, and then consumed by the kind of the food web as we're starting that. And for my perspective, really where I deal is not just on the wastewater side, but on the surface water side. And we spend a lot of resources restoring habitat, working on stream improvement projects. The keystone species that are out there, we've got bald eagles, we've got salmon in the state, and to be putting things out there that can bioaccumulate in the food web, this is one step that we can take to have source control, basically eliminate something that's on the front end versus having to remove it on the tail end of the waste process. So thanks for your time.
Thank you both for your testimony. So questions for these gentlemen? Okay. No questions. Thank you. To provide perhaps a different perspective, Josh Ballack, you're up. And then after that, we'll go to Representative Peluso.
Chair Edwards, members of the committee, for the record, Josh Ballack, testifying on behalf of the Personal Care Products Council. We are an association of many different personal care products manufacturers and retailers throughout the country, including Mary Kay. And basically, if you walk up and down the shampoo aisle, pretty much anybody who's on there is probably going to end up being one of our members. I just want to start off a little bit with just maybe put a little context into kind of where this bill came from and where this kind of originated. So I was approached by my clients to actually bring forward this bill. And the reason that they, in the original version of the bill that was proposed over in the House, was actually based off of a measured and well thought out negotiated idea that came out of Illinois, where they were able to take industry and environmentalists and be able to come up with a phased out approach to be able to get these beads out of the waters and get them out of our manufacturing processes. The bill ended up actually becoming a really good model and was has subsequently been passed in a few other states, including New Jersey. It was such a popular, or it was such a good, well thought out bill that Council of State Governments actually recommended it as a good bill for legislatures to pass throughout the state or for the states. Even though the I want to say that we do believe this is a that original bill is a firm and solid step forward. Even though a lot of the U.S. manufacturers have actually stopped producing these things and have already started to phase these out, this bill would catch foreign manufacturers, and that's a really important part of the market. And we want to make sure that we don't have them bringing in the beads and causing the trouble. We also would like to say that the big part of this is also to make it so that you don't create market forces and have other manufacturers try to go back to create these microbeads. That was part of the reason why we were in favor of it. We figured this was a sound, safe, and measured step moving forward. We have brought forward the Dash 8 amendments, which in essence just add some definition and clarification around what type of beads that we're trying to ban. In particular, for a lack of a better term, basically biodegradable. Saying that the non-biodegradable kinds of plastics or anything that are out there. Now, really what this is about giving a clear roadmap for manufacturers so they know exactly what they need to do in order to be in compliance with the law, and manufacturers to understand retailers to know exactly what they can and can't sell on their shelves. So that's why we are here in strong support of the Dash 8 amendments. I would also like to say that in previous conversation with the League of Cities, that they had talked about having a preemption piece, and that included so we would actually not have a problem with adopting the Dash 12 so that you didn't leave the preemption in place in perpetuity. So if you wanted to go with the Dash 8s and the Dash 12s, we would be wholly supportive. So we do have concerns about some of the language that is in the Dash 11 amendments. Most importantly, that essentially it's exactly the opposite of what the problem is with the Dash 8s, or the good things about Dash 8s. It just limits the clarity that that these manufacturers and retailers need in order to continue doing and follow the law. Again, we think if you were to adopt the Dash 8s and the Dash 12s, it would be a sound, reasonable step forward. It would go a long way to making sure that we're reducing the amount of microbeads that are in our water, and it would actually be an opportunity for both environmentalists and manufacturers to work together so that we can move forward with a bill. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Yes, sir, Denver.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. Josh, I understand that you're opposed, that you prefer the Dash 8s, but are you opposed to the Dash 11s?
Senator Edwards, Senator Denbrough, yes, we are.
I was told that something very similar exists in California, and the association was not opposed to that.
Senator Edwards, Senator Denbrough, I'm glad you brought that up. First and foremost, the Oregon law is a little more aggressive than the one that's in California. So our phase-out time is about a year faster than the one down in California. Secondly, these are really kind of apples to oranges comparisons. I mean, they've already got other things that are on the laws that actually already impact or have these definitions in other places or other different moving pieces. So it's really tough for me to be able to say this is why they supported this and not that. They're just different laws and set up in different ways. Okay. In different states.
And just again, in a nutshell, the actual opposition to the Dash 11s is what about them are you opposed to? Understanding that you prefer the 8s, but what harm is done by the 11s?
Senator Edwards, Senator Denbrough, it's about the lack of clarity. These manufacturers and retailers really need to know exactly what they can and cannot do, because after all, there are fines associated with this, and there are legal actions that can take place. So we want to make sure that we've got the lay of the land very crystal clear laid out so that nobody's running accidentally afoul of the law.
And what is it about the Dash 11s that doesn't give you that clarity?
I believe the Dash 11s take out the definition of plastic, and they also do not include the definition of non-biodegradable.
Okay. Any other questions for Josh? Okay, so in summary, and the way I understand this bill to date, is that we had a bill that came over from the House with strong support, and then in terms of the vote, you guys, your clients were supportive, and I believe most stakeholders were either neutral to supportive, like, eh, it's a pretty good bill. Yeah, we should do something in this arena. And then since then, you now on the Senate side would like to define with the dash eights, would like to define biodegradable and add some definitions in there. Other folks with the dash nines, Senator Gelser brought dash nine amendments to speed up the implementation. And you haven't spoken to those, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say you're probably not enthused about those. The dash nines would speed up implementation. The dash tens slash elevens make it a more, conservation-oriented bill. And I think the conservation community is more enthusiastic about it at this point, and you no longer support that if we go in that direction. Is that a fair assessment from
Chair Edwards? I think one small caveat, yes, that's very close. I think that in my testimony over in the House, I made it abundantly clear that we wanted to find some way to find a definition or somehow to get non-biodegradable put in, and I committed to try to find that compromise. And so that would be the only caveat to that. But yes, I think you're pretty dang close.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Questions for Josh? Okay. Thank you. Representative Peluso.
Good afternoon, Chair Edwards and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Carla Peluso, and I am the representative from House District 50, which includes the city of Gresham and a small part of southeast Portland. I am here to speak on behalf of House Bill 3478A, which would phase out the production and manufacturing of plastic microbeads in personal care products. This has bipartisan support and no fiscal impact. Before the concept for House Bill 3478 was brought to my attention, I had never given much thought to those tiny plastic beads that are in everything from body wash to toothpaste. Some popular facial cleansers and other personal care products can contain hundreds of thousands of plastic microbeads in a single container. These microbeads are small enough to bypass sewer and water treatment filters and have the potential to absorb toxins and could harm fish and other wildlife. Both environmentalists and the industry have come to agree on the need to eliminate microbeads from our waterways. Some corporations such as The Body Shop and Johnson & Johnson have already made commitments to phase out microbeads from their products, but swifter action is needed to protect Oregon's natural resources and wildlife. In the weeks leading up to the legislative session, a member of my staff visited the Gresham Wastewater Treatment Plant, who gave their support for the bill. She learned that beyond the positive environmental impact of House Bill 3478A, this bill was beneficial for local municipalities. It will save them money. Since wastewater treatment facilities are unable to remove plastic microbeads without expensive retrofits, taxpayers would have to shoulder the cost of upgrading treatment centers. What's more is that there are plenty of natural, safe, and environmentally friendly substitutes for harmful plastics, such as hazelnuts and fruit seeds, which could open up new markets for farmers here in Oregon. Introducing this legislation is a simple fix with great impact. This bill phases in a prohibition on the manufacturing and sale of personal care products and over-the-counter drugs that contain plastic microbeads, with full implementation by December 31st, 2019. The time frame ensures manufacturers of all sizes have the time they need to make adjustments and meet all requirements of the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. Furthermore, this bill was crafted with great care to ensure that small business owners who may sell products with these plastic microbeads would not be the focus of enforcement or face unfair fines as a result of this bill. I support House Bill 3478A because not only is it good for our environment, it will also provide cost savings for local governments across the state by eliminating plastic microbeads from our water before they arrive at our water treatment plants. I also want to express my support for the Dash 11 amendment, which closes some unintentional loopholes and ensures the ban is implemented as intended. It also removes local preemption language from the bill at the request of the League of Oregon Cities. I want to point out that many other states are working on this issue. Illinois, Colorado, Maine, and New Jersey have all passed laws phasing in a ban on the manufacturing and sale of microbeads. Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Washington, and California all have bills on the table. And again, as was mentioned earlier, the California Assembly passed a bill that is in line with House Bill 3478A-11. The Personal Care Products Council is not opposed to the California bill, and passing similar legislation in Oregon will provide the industry with certainty. Thank you, Chair Edwards and members of the committee. I appreciate your time and urge your support of House Bill 3478A with the Dash 11 amendments. And I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Representative. Questions? Would you characterize my assessment that I gave to Josh as kind of a fair assessment of the path to now? And then, and you're saying you're going for the 11s.
Yes, I support the 11s, and I do. I appreciate the path that you described. I believe that's very accurate.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Senator Denbrough.
So it seems that the key difference is over the use of the notion of biodegradable, right, that the Dash 11s are closing a loophole that where manufacturers could include products because they believe them to be biodegradable, and you would want to exclude them. Is that... I'm trying to puzzle through this.
I think, Senator Edwards, Senator Denbrough, I think the easiest way for me to understand it is that plastic is plastic, and it will never biodegrade. They can make it a smaller piece, but it's not going to biodegrade. So we're really supporting this on an environmental issue more than anything else.
Okay. Any other questions for the representative?
Nope.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. We do not have all the necessary paperwork for the amendments, so we're not going to work it today. We will be carrying it over to Wednesday, so we are carrying it over. It's, I don't want anybody to think it's dying right now, people can get a little skittish this time of session. So
to Wednesday.
To Wednesday, yes, to Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Not to next
Wednesday.
Session. Is there anybody else that wanted to testify on this bill that didn't sign up already? House Bill 3478, okay.
Going once, going twice.
We are going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3478A, and we are going to carry over the work session until Wednesday. So with that, we are going to move on to our next piece of legislation we're going to consider today, and that is House Bill 3050. We're going to open up a work session on House, or excuse me, a public hearing on House Bill 3050 regarding the LRAPA board.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 3050 would revise the composition of the board members of regional air quality control authorities. There's a no revenue and a no fiscal impact statement issued on the bill.
Merlin, if you would care to come forward and kick us off, that'd be great.
Thank you, Chair Edwards and members of the committee. I'm Merlin Huff, Director of Lane Regional Air Protection Agency, or LRAPA. And to quickly review, LRAPA is a regional air quality authority established under ORS 468A. The intergovernmental agreement to form LRAPA in 1968 has allowed local governments to more effectively and efficiently reduce air pollution within Lane County. LRAPA supports HB 3050. And we appreciate the introduction by Representative John Lively and Senator Floyd Przanski. The proposed changes in the statute are a consensus recommendation of the LRAPA Board of Directors in order to provide more equitable representation on the LRAPA board. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
So in the past, Merlin, this is not the first time we've seen a similar bill to this, I don't think.
That's correct.
And in the past, has it added two seats, or were two seats changed? Because I think some of the folks that are neutral on it this session have not been neutral on it in the past. So I just wanted to tease that out a little bit.
Okay. Yes, there was a much more extreme revision to this. It wasn't supported by LRAPA, but there was something that was much more extreme as a revision. This is a very, very minor revision. This would keep it. It's currently at nine members, the LRAPA board. The statute outlines how that can grow from five to nine over time as the cities in the county have grown. So this would keep the nine members of the LRAPA board. The cities of Eugene and Springfield would keep the representation they already have. Eugene would have four representatives. Springfield would have two, and that's based on the formula in the statute based on population. What this would do is take the currently the at-large spot and make it available so that Cottage Grove and Oak Ridge could both have permanent seats on the board rather than rotating that every 2 years. The way the statute's written, for cities under 25,000 population, there's one seat and that rotates. Well, it's up to the cities to figure that out. In this case, we've only had two cities that have both been members for 20-some years now, and this would provide more stability in that by using that at-large spot. The statute doesn't require an at-large spot. It provides an at-large spot if you need to get to an odd number of board members. Over the years, this has become nine, and so now it's at the it's matured to the full to the maximum that the statute allows. And so this was based on the 20-some year participation by these two cities to both give them a seat rather than having to rotate back and forth.
Okay, so it takes just the at-large seat. So it's only really one seat. We talk about two different communities being able to have a seat, but it's one of them already. One of the two has a seat at any given time.
That's correct.
Right. Yeah, they've been rotating, but now they'll each be separate. And
they could
standing.
Each be separate by taking the at-large spot, which wasn't mandatory previously, and says, okay, this one will be also dedicated for that size of city, under 25,000?
Yes.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Question? Are there nobody signed up, so I have had almost no communication on this bill to my office that I'm aware of. Have you, Senator Przanski?
I have not. Both the cities
from Wayne County, so kind of sensitive to it.
Well, both those the cities that are impacted by that are in the district for, and I've not had any direct conversation. Where in the past there was a lot of conversation as to the concerns that were being brought forward previously. I would assume that they're both very happy that they'll be able to have independent seats and not have to do the rotation.
Yeah, we have had a lot of in past iterations of changing the mix up of the board. I think the cities weighed in, the chambers of commerce has weighed in, and I'm assuming silence is at least neutrality. So
Yes, it was passed by almost unanimously in the House. The two, I think there were a couple of nay votes, and they weren't from any Lane County representatives.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Somebody needs to put a bell on Thompson.
We only need three, right?
What's that?
he can vote. No, that's fine.
Yeah. I mean, just go ahead. So we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3050. And we are going to open up a
work session.
I want to work the bill, but I want to wait till Thompson's here for sure.
Oh.
Because with Senator Olson gone,
yeah.
I don't want to end up just with these party votes.
No, I think he's
curious. So we are going to open up a work session now on House Bill 3050. And I think that this sounds like it's pretty non-controversial. And sounds like anybody that has a dog in the fight is fine. I know that I would be sensitive to it if they weren't representing an adjacent district to the good senators down there. So.
So
love to have a motion.
For that reason, Mr. Chair, I'm going to move House Bill 3050 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Dembro has moved House Bill 3050 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay. Are there any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries. And Senator Przanski, you want to carry this bill?
Yes, I do.
All right. Senator Przanski will carry, and we will close the work session on House Bill 3050. And let me see, folks, where we are at this point on the agenda. We did that. Okay. 3214. We're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3214A. Beth, if you could tell us what the bill does, and we'll call forth Rich Vile, Brian King, and Dave Honeycutt.
Chair and committee members, House Bill 3214A would require LCDC to adopt or amend rules regarding statewide planning goal criteria, allowing local governments to rezone land developed or committed to residential use without requiring local governments to take a new exception to statewide planning goals related to agriculture and forest land. There's a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact statement issued on the bill.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, here in support of House Bill 3214A. This bill came out of the House Rural Communities Committee on a unanimous vote. It came off the House floor on a 59-0 vote. What the bill does is it deals with exception areas, which are rural areas that for which a county has taken an exception to goals 3 and 4. Goal 3 is the state's agricultural lands goal. Goal 4 is the state's forest lands goal. So these are areas that are no longer considered to be agricultural or forest land. We're talking about rural industrial, rural residential, and rural commercial areas. And what this bill does is it requires LCDC to adopt new rules that deal with how a property owner in an exception area goes from one rural zone to another rural zone. In this case, the case that led to this bill, House paving out of Clackamas County, the issue was how to go from a rural residential zone to a rural industrial zone. The county believed that they could house paving could do that without taking a new exception to goal 3 and 4. An exception had already been taken in order to get the property into its rural residential zone in the first place. The county believed that house paving could go from rural residential to rural industrial without taking a new exception to goals 3 and 4. But LUBA unfortunately disagreed, and in a there are three LUBA administrative law judges. In this case, LUBA was trying to interpret the LCDC's administrative rules. They came up with three different opinions. So each LUBA judge said, well, we think they have to take an exception, but none of the three of them could agree why, hence the need for LCDC to do some rule clarification, redo their rules, and spell this out. What the bill requires, when LCDC does their new rulemaking, they are required to allow a rezone from on a built and committed exception area from rural residential to rural industrial for an industrial user who has been in, using the property for an industrial use for at least 5 years if they meet a series of criteria, and those criteria are all set forth in the bill. It's a good bill. Worked closely with Bob Rendy at DLCD on the amendments over on the House side. I believe at the end, Mr. Rendy and I were the only two that that were there to testify on the bill. So I have Mr. Vile, who represents House Paving, and Brian King from House Paving here to answer any particular questions about their particular the facts that led to this. But it's a good little bill, and again, there was no opposition.
Great. Do either of you want to? You're here just to answer questions.
I don't think we have anything to add. Chair Edwards, members of the committee, I would say that
your name for the record,
Rich Vile, Vile Fotheringham. Thank you. I would say that this bill definitely solves a problem that keeps a business intact that's been there for 50 years and allows them to continue to operate at the location that they've been operating.
So in layman's terms, what would you say? What happened? What happened in this particular case?
We've got a parcel of property that was committed to a industrial use originally back in the 50s, auto repair and truck repair. Mm-hmm. Howell's Construction moved onto the property about 25 years ago and began not necessarily expanding, but modifying the use of the property to run their paving operation on the property. They went in to apply for a building permit to build a building that was required when the state changed its rules on inspection of trucks, and opposition from neighbors prevented them from doing so. The application did not change the nature of the property, the nature of the impacts on the surrounding area, but because of this very odd rule that we had it in the DLCD rules, one of the neighbors was able to mount this challenge that it really did confuse LUBA, as Mr. Honeycutt says, and LUBA had three different opinions on it. This will allow the county to be confident that having once taken an exception to an ag use, they don't have to take that exception again every time they change the zoning on a particular piece of property in that area.
Questions of the panel?
Do it.
All right. Okay. Does anybody else wish to testify on 3214A, House Bill 3214? I don't see anybody, not even the masked committee chair in the back. So we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3214A, and we're going to open up a work session on House Bill 3214A.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3214A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Dembro has moved House Bill 3214A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries. And this isn't in your district, is it?
No.
Is it in Senator Olson's district?
That's what I was going to say. Dave, where's it at?
I believe it is in, I think it's Senator Olson's, yes.
We'll give Senator Olson the option to carry this because I think it might be in his district.
Close enough.
It's just a line adjustment. Just a line adjustment away. And if he doesn't, then I'll carry it. So, with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 3214A. And we are going to pause just to make sure that we got everything right here, colleagues, because we don't want to lose anything just because we didn't announce it.
I've got nine
ten
carry,
times.
I've got nine carryovers.
I think we're okay.
So, and okay, so that's one, two, three, four, five, seven, eight. Wait, that's two. We did that.
All the bills that weren't passed.
It's not 5 o'clock yet.
Over.
Okay.
Everything you have, that's a good carryover. Just everything you have already. Haven't worked today. You're carrying.
I told my state till 5.
Yeah. Does that count? Yeah, it is the intent of the chair to carry over everything that was on the schedule today in one form or the other. That we, whether it was posted for a possible work session or a public hearing, a possible work session, or a work session, or a public hearing, or anything that was posted for some sort of action today that did not get a work session today, we are carrying all those over to Wednesday.
The work sessions.
And that includes, but is not limited to, in case I miss any of them, House Bill 3315, House Bill 2453, House Bill 3217A, House Bill 3382, House Bill 2830A, House Bill 3478A, House Bill 2277, House Bill 2463, House Bill 2509.
That's it.
That's it. So with that.
Mr. Chair, although these are plenty, are there any additional ones on Wednesday?
Public hearing.
Oh, there is one public hearing. I'm trying to remember what the bill number is.
It'll be posted.
Yeah, there is one that's already posted on there. So I think, though, that we will have a bunch of amendments coming back and paperwork ready, and we'll have a little bit of a discussion on probably a couple of the bills, but most of them will go fairly quickly. So, all right, we're adjourning. I'm going to say that it's on time. So we are adjourned. Adjourning. I'm going to say that it's on time. So we are.